Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome on to the show. I am your host, Anna Black, and tonight we have a show in store for you with two lovely authors that's going to come and share a little bit about themselves and their works. Tonight we will be joined by authoress Luna Charles. She's going to talk about her novel, Men Are Not the Problem. And a little later on the show, we're going to be joined by Miss Antoinette Davis, and she's going to talk about her novels. She has a two-part series out called Lessons on Church Folks. So we're going to hear a little bit about the first installment and her second installment a little later on in the show. For those who are tuning in, as we always say, to please invite others to listen in so they can get to know some of our authors too. We do cater to African American authors while we try to promote and showcase their literary works and get them some exposure. So if you are a regular that tune in, always share it. If you see a link posted on Facebook broadcasting the show, always feel free to copy that link and repost it, because we do want as many listeners as we can get to tune in to get to know our up-and-coming authors. And some seasons, some been around in the game for a long time. We have had guests like Honeybee Morrison, McMillan, Terry McMillan's sister, actually, and I don't know why her name just escaped my brain. We also have had Kimberla Lawson Robeson on before, so we've had a couple of seasoned artists on as well as newcomers. So always, always tune in and tell a friend. Tonight, our first guest is going to be Miss Luna Charles. I'm going to introduce her. Luna, if you could actually hear me, say hello, and how are you?
Hi, Ms. Black. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to do these kinds of formats when you, as an African-American author, get to be promoted by other African-American businesses and radios and journalists and so on and so forth, because it's really, even though there's so many of us, we're really a small community when it comes to the huge literary world out there, and I don't think they take us as seriously as they should. And I think as the more that we help each other out, the stronger we will be, and the more serious they will start taking us as authors and as, like, a force to be reckoned with. So, again, thank you for having me.
You're absolutely welcome, and you're absolutely right. A lot of people have a misconception on Black authors and readers. A lot of people assume that Black people don't read, and that's not true. That's a stereotype or an opinion, because there are a lot of readers out there, and I know a lot of them now. So they do read. They do love reading African-American literature, whether it's street fiction, romance, sci-fi. We have a lot of Black people out there that are writing some page-turning stories. So it is sad that they think that, but it's not true, and the more we strive to help each other, we'll get there. And I think we're on a road to success. I really do.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's always a grassroots thing when it comes to Black folks. Like I have to say it, we always have to be, I don't think we give it ourselves as much strength as we could possibly, as much determination as we could possibly do. I think if we were more united as a front, that we would advance a lot faster. But it only takes one person to show another person the way, you know, before it's a domino effect, and before you know it, we're where we supposed to be. You know what I mean? The pyramid certainly wasn't built in one day, but we did it, right? So God knows what else we can do when we bend together. So.
Exactly. So, Luna, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into your novel. Give us a little background on you, your history, where you come from, you know, what city and state, are you married, have a family? Give us a little insight about you.
I'm originally from Haiti. I'm in Port. I came up here when I was 9 years old in 1989. I'm the oldest of 5 kids, 2 brothers and 2 sisters, you know. So I spent my whole life being annoyed by my younger siblings and trying to, like, lock them in the closet. Most of my escape was actually me climbing the roof of my house to read away from them. So that's how I got into reading. I'm married to a wonderful husband, Louis Hardcastle, and I do love him so much, even though sometimes I just want to choke him. And I have 2 beautiful daughters, a 5-year-old who is already working my nerves, and a 2-year-old who I'm ready to send to military school. So
the 2-year-old, you got to ship her out.
She is ready for military school. I'm telling you, if they get a whole bunch of 2-year-olds together and send them to a war zone, it's done. It's done. Like, the war would be over. They'd be like, get these kids away from us. It's, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I think a few 2-year-olds can ambush a whole country because they're bad.
Yeah. They are, and they don't listen, and they think they know everything. And my 2-year-old, she is. I'm telling you, if she wants something, she will ask you for it, like, an hour straight. Like, you could tell her no 1,000 times, and she'll come back and ask you again and again and again. And it's either you ignore her or you give it to her, but she's not going to give up.
Yeah, they have no concept of the word no. It's like, oh, whatever.
No.
If I ask, she'll change her mind.
Yeah.
So tell us about your move over to the literary world. How long have you been writing, and what inspired you to start writing a book in the first place? Like, what made you just sit down and write this book?
You know, it goes back again to the concept of self, because I've always written. Because when I came up here in 1989, being Haitian wasn't that popular, so I didn't have, like, a great many friends. So I wrote. I used to walk around with these composition notebooks, and I would write poems, and I was, you know, really moody and depressing because, oh, the world hates me type of thing. So I figured out and all my things, but I never in my mind could envision that as a black person that I could write a novel, you know what I mean? And so I read everybody else's books and, you know, that was Toni Morrison, and there was Edwidge Dunseca, and I think it was Edwidge Dunseca when Breath, Eyes, and Memories first came out, and I was in 10th grade, that gave me the first concept that as a Haitian person that I could be a writer, but it was still not within my self-realization to see that I had the strength to do it, because to me she was like, oh my God, and with Tosika, you know, she was outside the realm of possibilities to me, you know. But it was because of all the struggles that I was going through, and I was chronicling them over and over. And it was because it went from one journal to two journals to three journals, and then I was like, it was one day I was like, you know what, I could just make this a book. And it really took me 5 years to be happy enough with the product. I must have rewrote it a million times, because, you know, when you're writing a book, you don't have a general concept of where you're going with it. You're just writing, just to write. So it was writing, taking characters out, changing scenes. This is not what I'm trying to say. I don't think anybody's going to like this. Putting it down, being frustrated, ripping pages, having a nervous breakdown, then going back to the computer and telling yourself, I can do this. I can do this.
And the thing is, Luna, once you have a story in you, it's got to be told. Matter how many times you sit down and attempt to do it, or how long it takes you, if you have something inside of you, and it's a story, it has to be told. So some stories take a long time, because I still have uncompleted novels that I've been working on for years, and some novels I can bang them out in like 3 weeks. I'm done, because I know what I want to say, I know how I want to say it, and it flows awesomely.
Yeah.
But not all the time. So when you have that story in you, it doesn't matter how many times you return to it, it has to be told. You're not going to stop until it's done.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about when you're writing, it is exactly what you have to get it out, or it's not going to let you sleep at night. You know what I mean? I have to love my husband, because there were so many times, like, I would be in front of the computer, like, I was on drugs, like, tapping away at the keys. And he would just walk by me and, like, slowly walk away, like, let me get out of here before something happens to me type of thing, you know? Because I look like a crazy person.
Right. But, I understand, because I know with being an author and what we do, because I have a lot of sleepless nights. I write a lot at night, and I know my husband, when he's here, because my husband's been away for a while, my husband's in Afghanistan, but when he's here, he's like, you know what, you going to turn that computer off and go to bed or what? I'm like, just one more chapter, one more paragraph, just one more sentence. You just can't stop. You just can't stop.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it.
So this title, Men Are Not the Problem.
Yeah.
Your first book, I know, is your baby. I know you put a lot of work into this novel. Tell me how you came up with the title, first of all. and then give me a little insight of the book. Tell me a little bit about the main character and what the character is actually going through in the book. But first, how did you come up with your title?
I think my title is always the last thing that comes to me. Like, I start writing the book, and I have no idea what the title is. And I was just kicking around things in my head. You know, I was sitting there meditating, writing, you know, life and death in a rum bottle, just different titles that, you know, about things that the book could possibly be about. And it was a realization that what Celine was going through was realizing that everything that was happening to her so far, she had blamed on outside influences, and those outside influences had been the men in her life, and then her realizing they weren't the problem. So I was like, men are not the problem. And that title gets so misconstrued so many times. I have to go and defend my title because women are like, what? What are you talking about, girl? You know, this makes me... I'm like, look. Wait. Every strong woman can say that we can realize that sometimes when we are in a relationship that we have to take it upon ourselves to be like, look, I cannot believe I'm still with you because I could just walk away at any given time. You know what I mean? So you have to take partial responsibility. It takes 50-50 to be in a relationship, and that's why I named it Men Are Not the Problem, because, you know, that's because of her. I'm not saying all in general men are not the problem. I'm just saying for her, men were not the problem. It was her trying to face her own demons that caused her to be in where she was.
And that's a valid point, Luna, because I do agree with you with that title. And for someone to get defensive or take it personal, they might be the same as your main character, because a lot of people don't realize, or a lot of women, even men, don't realize if you have a list of unsuccessful relationships, and you have to sometimes back up and look at yourself, what are you doing? What are you doing? If you have 10 failed relationships and it's all the same thing, you are the common denominator in that problem. So a lot of people are not taking responsibility and say, hey, if this is the same issue I'm having repeatedly, maybe it's something about me that I need to fix. So I agree with that title, and some may take it offensively, but it's the truth. Sometimes men are not the problem. Sometimes it is us.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, again, it could have been women are not the problem when it comes to men, because I know a lot of men that – And this used to be my running joke when I used to hang out with my guy friends, and because I have, you know, a lot of guy friends that I love dearly, you know, my best friend Lucien Walls and Miles Smith, and you know, they're great people that I've looked up to, and like we'll go to a club and they'll bring one of their homeboys with us, and the guy is like, yo man, you know, I'm gonna hook up with some B today, yo, I'm gonna take some B home, da 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 da, and then the next thing you're listening to them, they're like, yo, this girl was nothing but a B-dog. And I'm like sitting there, but that's what you were looking for. And you went into the club, and you said that's what you're getting. And now you're mad because that's what you get. You know what I mean? So taking responsibility for your actions. You know, you manifest certain things into your existence as you're saying them, and I don't think people understand that. And like what you said, the common denominator, if you're in 10 different relationships and all the guys cheat on you, what is it that you're doing that's causing that? Are you sitting there constantly, like, you know, pressuring him? You're not letting him go out anywhere. You don't trust him, so he feels like, you know, he has to do something. Like, you have to take a step back and see yourself what is the common denominator in everything. And that's...
Right, because some of the issues are in you, not in him.
Yeah,
or vice versa.
Exactly.
Of a jealous man who don't let his woman go out or do anything. Say, hey, dude, you're going to run her off because you're too tight. You need to loosen the grip. So sometimes it's what you do to cause your relationship to fail, but you're too busy blaming other folks. I definitely get that concept.
Yeah.
So what have readers been saying about the book? What type of feedback have you been getting? And I always ask for the author to give positive feedback and negative feedback. What are some of the good things people are saying about the book, and also what are some of the bad things that people are saying about the book?
I've been getting a lot of great positive and a lot of very, I wouldn't say negative. I like to put them as positive criticism, because I'm a person that takes criticism very well. And if somebody tells me that it's a really great book, but, you know, if you had spent a little bit more time editing it, it would have been better, I'm going to listen to that. You know what I mean? Because that's telling you something about your next book. And those are the things, like, I could relate to the main character. It's a very descriptive book. You feel like you're right there with them. I can understand where it's going from. It teaches you things about multicultural relationship, that it doesn't matter if you're in a black and white relationship or a black on black relationship. Everybody has those kinds of problems if you're the person that is not accepting of who you are type of thing, which is great. But like I said, some of the criticisms have been like, it's a great book, but it could have been like better edited, and it could have been more well adjusted. So, which is okay, because, you know, it's my first book. I was expecting a Nobel Peace Prize for it, but I'll take it. But, you know,
right,
like my
right.
husband said, like, I'm not getting like 1 stars and 2 stars. The lowest I've gotten was like a 3-star review, and I'll take it for my first book, because I know my second, third, and fourth book is going to be like 5 stars. And so, you know, it's training.
Yeah. We take it in stride, because it's also true.
Yeah.
I'm about to actually release my fifth book come April. And even with my very first book, is actually my bestseller and still my bestseller today. But every now and again, although that book has went through an editing process a few times, every now and again I get a review from someone saying it was horribly edited and there was so many grammatical errors. And I'm like, okay, I have one or two people saying it, but I have 100 over here not saying anything about it. I have 100 over here giving me 5. So I take it with a grain of salt, because the book is not perfect. It is not, but it doesn't take away from the story. So that's the main thing. As long as the people can get the message of the story that you're trying to put out, that's worth more than, I guess, them saying, okay, there's a few grammatical errors. Okay, but did you get the book? Did you understand the story?
Yeah.
That's the most important part.
Yeah, I think
so
that's
you,
what it is like.
I was looking and saying your book actually came out April of 2011. So right now, what's next for you? What are you working on now? What will be coming out soon for you?
Do you have something that you want to release soon? I was going to release a book on Monday, and then my sister is reading the proof, and she says that the word surprise was supposed to be surprised, and it's missing the ED. So I was like, fudge, darn it. So
right.
I'm going back through it with like a fine tooth comb. Like, I will not. And this book, it's nonfiction. It's a self-help book with short stories and exercises. And the reason that I think a lot of times is that the story picks you, or the book picks you to write it. You don't really pick the book, you sit down to write something, and what comes out is what comes out. And I was actually working on my second novel when Love, Laugh, and Live came out of me. And I think it came out of me because I have so many people that I've ran across that have dealt through the hardships that I've gone through, you know, but they don't seem to find the focus inside of them. They don't seem to find the love of, you know, the universe that is inside of all of us to focus on. They keep focusing on the hardships, on whether you were abused, whether you went to jail, whether, you know, everybody went through it. I went through it. I could honestly say 7 years ago, I was sitting in a jail cell, you know what I mean? And I had nothing to my name. So if I did it, anybody can do it. And I just want people to realize that, and I just want to, you know, share my personal actual stories with them and go through the exercises and what I did to get myself into a better place to accomplish what I have accomplished, because I don't think anybody, whether you're Oprah or Bill Gates or, you know, you're Langston Hughes or Toni Morrison or anything, nobody is more different than anybody. We're all born with the same kind of gifts inside of us. The only difference is somebody decided that they were going to grab themselves by the bootstrap and they were not going to stop moving until they got what they wanted out of life, you know, and anybody can do that. You just got to find the courage to do it, and it's all it is finding the courage, because in my first book, I had so many people tell me I could not write a book. I would not write a book. This book would not work. English is not your first language. You're not an English major. You don't do this and you don't do that. And look, I wrote the book. It's not a Nobel Peace Prize book, but I wrote the book, and it's a great book, and I love all the criticism that I've gotten for it, whether it's positive or negative, and anybody who decides to do something, they can do it, and that's why I wrote the second project as a nonfiction self-help book.
And I'll tell you, though, I'll give you a little bit of advice, because I do know that you are self-published, and self-published nowadays is definitely a big thing. Most every new author that I'm coming across now are going that route, because it's so hard to get with a traditional publisher now. But the main advice I would give you as a newcomer, not like I'm old either, I'm not Terry McMillan, or I'm not Morrison, I haven't been in the business for years, but the most important key in a great novel, besides the story, is the editing. And I don't care how much it costs or what you need to do to save yourself from any people just putting down your book or walking away from your book before they even finish it. I always recommend editing. We cannot edit our own books. I don't care how we try. It doesn't matter how many times you read that book. You're going to miss a lot of things because you know what you wrote. So I don't care if you find a group of ladies that, if you give your manuscripts to 3 or 4 different people and let them go through it and proof it, it's all worth it, and take your time, because nothing takes away from a great book but horrible editing. I have, by me being a book reviewer also, if I can't get through a book because the editing is so bad, I will put it down and I will send that author an email directly before I actually give them a bad review, because I don't want to do that. But always keep in mind that is the most important phase of putting out a book, the editing phase, because people
will
dog you about the editing.
I completely agree with that. That's why the first book was professionally edited, and the second book was professionally edited. I don't think it's like grammar errors or these things that they were talking about. I think mostly maybe it was the flow that they were talking about.
I'm not saying directly to you, Luna. I'm sorry. I don't want you to feel that way. I'm just speaking to the listeners or upcoming authors in general, because a lot of aspiring authors do tune into the show, and they always like to listen to different authors' journeys and how they became successful or published. So that's always my advice to any author, not just you personally, but any author. Editing is a definite must in the publishing process. It really is, and it has a major effect on our books. So I'm sorry. I didn't mean it personally. I apologize.
That's the way
I came off. I'm sorry.
Ms. Black, I promise you there is hardly anybody in the world that could do something or say something to me that could hurt my feelings after that I've been through. I say everything. I literally take everything with a grain of salt. My husband will tell you I'm really emotional, but I'm emotional in the sense that if I see the sunrise, I'll start crying because I think it's so beautiful and the universe is beautiful and God created the world and everything is so beautiful in it. But if somebody is going to attack me viciously, I'm just going to laugh at you and say, you know what, I love you. I hope whatever you're going through will get better. I promise you that. And I
that is definitely a positive way to look at life.
Yeah,
I would look at life that way.
You know
really?
What? I've been through so much in my life, really and truly, and it's like to have gone through all of this and be where I am today and realize that I did it through the power of the God that is inside of me and using him and him and me mm-hmm. working together to accomplish it, you start feeling like there is really that anybody outside of yourself can do to hurt you. You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. You have
to move through life like you're kind of invincible. I'm not going to say I can bounce bullets off of me, but I'm not going to let anybody's words hurt me because really and truly you don't know what is planned for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And whatever your words may be, thank you. I love you. Have a nice day. You know, and I know you didn't direct that towards me, and editing is by far the most important thing because I know I get manuscripts people send to me to read over, and it's like just the simple mistakes, the simple, the two versus the two type, the then versus the then type things that an editor can't, you know what I mean? Like, I still have problems with that, and I have to repeat in my head, like, two means also, you know,
right.
When I'm writing it.
Exactly. I know, exactly. Yeah, because I think I have a problem all the time with the word there. It's supposed to be T-H-E-I-R, but I'd be T-H-R-E-R-E-E,
yeah.
Whatever. But I always get that one wrong. That is the worst word for me, there. I have every manuscript, there is the worst word for me. I always mess that one up.
No, it was, I think, when I first came to America, I had a small speech impediment. I sounded like Sylvester, and now I over-enunciate everything so nobody catches it. And I couldn't say the word English at all. And my
students
would sit there like, English? I'd be like, English? And then I couldn't tell the difference between the two B words. The B word, that means, like, going to the, you know, beach, and the other one. I would be telling stories.
Okay.
Like, the teacher would be like, what did you do for the weekend? And I'm like, we went to the other word.
You say you went to the beach, not the beach. So, Ms. Charles, give our listeners the information on how to get your book and your website information, because we're going to move over to our second hour in a moment. So give us your contact information and where they can get the book.
Okay. The book is actually available everywhere. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it through Amazon, of course. Personally, I favor that you get it through my website, which is lunacharles.com. It also has, you know, all the information on the upcoming book that you can pre-order right now for $10. You can get the upcoming events. Like, I have a book signing coming up at the Hollandale Beach Library on Saturday from 2 to 3, which I will be speaking about Men Are Not the Problem, and I will also be speaking about Love, Laugh, and Live with Passion, Secrets to a Greater Life. We'll have refreshments. I'll have my upcoming events. We're going to have a great year. I hope everybody checks out the book. I hope everybody contacts me through my webpage to ask me any questions that they could possibly want to know about me. And I want everybody to just know that you're going to have a great year. Just think positive. You're going to have a great year and have an awesome, awesome night. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us, Luna. We will, at the end of the show, I will repeat your book titles and your website and your email and your Facebook and everything like that, so no worries. But we do thank you for hanging out with us tonight. And when your new book comes out, even if it comes out within the next couple weeks, you can always come back and talk about your new projects. We have no problem with that. We have repeat guests all the time. So you are always welcome to come back.
Thank you so much, Ms. Black, and you have a wonderful night. And I hope Ms. Antoinette has a great interview with you as I did.
All righty. Good night.
Good night.
We were just joined, you guys, by Ms. Luna Charles, and she gave us a little insight on her current novel, Men Are Not the Problem. And she's also working on something new called Love, Laugh, and Live with Passion. So if you want to get any more information about her, again, you can visit her website at www.lunacharles.com. And at the end of the hour, I will give you guys a reminder of that information. Next up, we have our next guest, Miss Antoinette Davis. And Miss Antoinette, if you can hear me, please say hello.
Hello, Miss Black. How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm good.
And thank you for joining us on the show. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, Miss Davis. Now, she has two books out, you guys, and it's a two-part series. The titles of her books are Lessons on Church Folk. So definitely want to talk about those, definitely, because we always hear a lot of, Christian fiction, and we have people talking about what goes on in the church and things like that. So I'm down to hear your interpretation of what goes on in the church with church folks. But before we get into your book, of course, same thing, you have to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, a little personal history, where you're from, your family, and all that good stuff.
All right. Good evening, listeners. My name is Antoinette Marie Davis, and I am the daughter of Andrea and Doris Davis. I am the younger sister of Andrea L. Davis, and I am a math person. Math is my best friend in all of the world. If I'm ever
and math
as
in 2 + 2 = 4, math?
Yes.
What state do you live in? Because my 13-year-old needs somebody to help her out, and I am not a math person.
Oh, I live in Kentucky.
Darn, you live too far. So go ahead and finish, because I got another question, because I want to know, if math is your thing, how do we get into the literary side? But we're going to get there. So a little bit more. You have more. You're single. You're married. Got a little rugrats. What's going on?
I am single at the moment. I do not have any rugrats and none in the making at the moment. And I am excited about these projects. And what I've done is I've gone through the educational track. I've completed my associate's degree, my bachelor's degree in math, as well as a master's degree in math. And right now I am in doctoral study. So I am using these two books as what I call fun writing. I know I have to do academic writing each day, but in writing books, it gives me a chance to have a balance and do writing that I want to do. So right now I'm working on my doctorate degree in instruction and administration with a specialization in math education. And this is the semester where I am not taking any classes, but I am preparing for my comprehensive examinations.
Wow. So what actually gave you that fun writing motivation? Like, you have so much going on because you went all the way in school. I mean, all the way. So when you decide to sit back and kick up your heels and take a breath, what made you come up with this concept? What made you sit down to write this book?
Actually, after I completed my master's degree, I spent 2 years in Michigan. And during those 2 years, my grandfather, who has been a fixture in my life for over 29 years, he got sick. And we thought it was just going to be a light illness, something that he could get beyond. But as it turns out, it was cancer. And I was able to see him go from 100 pounds to 75 and then to 50. And I saw the entire deterioration process, and it was hard for me to understand that my grandfather's going to pass away. But as a Christian, I was still holding on to the fact that God can heal. He can turn this whole situation around, because I've seen so many people who have had cancer, and they say, you know, I've been healed of cancer, and I'm living an active life. And I was looking at my grandfather as he's been a member of the church over 60, 70 years, and, I mean, truly God can heal him. I mean, he's a Christian. But as it turns out, God chose not to heal him, and he did pass away. And when he passed away, I remember going through nights where I was just crying, just in tears, every single night, because I did not know how life would be without him, because he had always been there. And what I did was I was talking to my mother one day, and she told me, you know, Antoinette, perhaps this is too much for you to handle. Maybe you need to go to counseling. And I am one to say that I have no problem with counseling. It is as a result of going to counseling that I was able to write these books. because my counselor told me, Antoinette, you tend to express yourself better on paper than you do in person. And I wrote both of these books while I was going through the counseling process. And I call it my bereavement writing. And as a result of that experience, I was able to look at church and look at Christianity in a whole new different light. And to know that even though we have situations or our relatives may have diseases, there are times when God will choose not to heal because he's trying to take us to a different place in our spiritual walk. And if that person
right,
is
and
always
and it's not that God don't heal. It's just not he's not healing on this side of his life, our life. It's on this side, on the earthly side. So it's not saying that God said no. God just said not here.
Right.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about the storyline and who are the main characters and give us a little background or inside track on what's actually going on between the pages of Lessons on Church Folk. Now, since it's a series, you can start with the first installment and then move us over to the second installment. You don't have to just talk about the current book. You can start off with where it actually started from book one.
Okay. In Lessons on Church Folk, Volume 1, basically I started from issues that I had seen in the church. And when I started Volume 1, I was in my earlier sessions in counseling. And I talked about issues such as love, hate, gossip, cheating, pain, divorce, and drama, because those were things that I was seeing around in the people that I was surrounded by in church. So, of course, I saw it, and I said, well, I wonder how this works, and I wonder how that works. So I did some observations, I did some research, and I was able to compile these stories as a result of that. And within the actual book for Volume 1, there are 200 stories, and there are 200 different characters.
Okay, wait a minute. Let's back up then. So it's not a straight novel. It is broken down. It's an anthology. It's separate stories. Oh, okay. All right. Now, yeah, I definitely want to explain this because are there each individual story, does it deal with a new situation or a new problem, or some of the problems are related or connected?
Some of the problems are connected, but in each story I try to give each part a different perspective on a certain issue. Say, for example, if chapter one talks about inappropriate relationships, then I made sure that chapter two spoke about relationships, but in terms of women and how they handle issues in relationships.
Okay. Wow. So it was more so, because this is my first experience with a published work such as yours, because I can truly say, honestly, I have rarely even read self-help books. Most books I enjoy are romance or just contemporary urban fiction. So I'm just really trying to understand the setup or the way it flows. Because, is it like reading one poem, then moving over to the next poem or moving over to the next poem? Or what I'm trying to figure out is, like, I'm sorry, let's back up because I don't want to be confused here because I'm confusing myself now. 200 stories over 200 characters. So were you journaling these situations as you were writing them?
Yes, I was journaling some situations as I was writing them.
Okay. Now it's a little bit more clear to me because it's like if you were journaling, you're taking these situations from journaling to create a story behind a journal. I understand now. Got you. Okay. So we're going to move on. So is volume two same scenario? Because what I'm asking for is, give me, I know you gave me, like, the actual subject or what the topic would be about, but I want a little bit more, like, pick one of your stories in general and give us the character's name and give us a little insight on what's going on with these particular characters.
Okay. I will start with chapter one. And chapter one says, in church, this is just a basic small paragraph. It says, in church, you seek to find a closer walk with Christ. But when you get there, you are met with gossip, ignorance, lack of trust, backbiters, cheaters, thieves, etc. But how do you get beyond these things? where your main goal is to focus on God and then stay out of other folks' business, and perhaps they will stay out of yours as well. The basic storyline is a character named Sarah, and she's a young lady, and she came to the church to find Christ. But when she got there, she found one of the church elders, and he was working with her to increase her relationship with Christ. And as time went on, their friendship turned into a relationship. Now, currently she's 18 years old, but I never said that her relationship with him started when she was 18. He is 32 years old. And because she was young, she wanted his attention, but over time, the elder outgrew their relationship. And as time went on, he ended up telling the entire church about his relationship with her. And it made it very bad for her because people tended to judge her because she was a female and also because she was young. But the situation ended up that Sarah ended up leaving the church because she felt like everybody was against her. And many people voiced their opinions of her.
And both of them were actually in the physical relationship, but she's getting all the heat because she is actually the female.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wow. The best thing for me to do, I'm going to have to go ahead and order this and send it to my Kindle and read it because that'll give me a better insight of it because this is new to me. So I'm not slow or anything like that, but it's something interesting because I have never actually read a novel or a published work in this format, you know, and that's awesome. That's something to me is kind of creative because it's different.
Thank you.
So what type of feedback do you get from readers?
So far I've gotten a lot of feedback, especially from the older group, like those who are 50-plus. And they've read the book, and they said, I cannot believe that a person in their 20s actually wrote this book. Like, where did you get this knowledge from? And I've told them most of my babysitters coming up were 50-plus. So when they talk to me, they talk to me not like I was a child, but they talk to me in real life in terms of this is what's going to happen in your life in certain situations. And I've incorporated that within the book. But in terms of negative comments that I've received, I received two reviews where the two reviewers said that they thought that it should include more scriptural references. And I want to remind all of my readers and listeners, this is not a book on sermons. This is not a book on Christian lifestyle. This is lessons on church folk that I've seen in the people that I've been around. So it will not contain scriptural references. There are very few within the book. But each and every story, since there are 400 of them, there will not be 400 scriptures. I did not want to make this into a study Bible because that's not the direction I was going. I wanted people to be able to see that these are some situations that we've seen in our churches, and I want to make people more aware of what is going on in the church. And it's not all negative. There's positive, but there's also negative. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Love Talk Radio. Hello?
Hello?
Internet?
Yes.
I don't know what happened. I really don't know. All I know is I heard some funny sounds, and all of a sudden, everybody went blank. So I'm so happy that you called back in. Wow.
Not sure what happened, but I'm glad we're back on the call.
Yeah, I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, are you angry, Satan, because we're talking the truth? What's going on?
I couldn't hear anything at all.
I couldn't hear anything at all either. I just heard some funny scratching sound in the phone and a lot of static, and then I lost you, but I'm glad you called back in.
I don't know what was the last thing was said. Anyway, we're going to get on to the second volume, a little bit about the second volume. Second volume, same format, same scenario, or different format, something new, or how does our installment 2 work?
The second volume is set up the exact same way as volume 1. Basically, I talk about characters and the different committees that they're on, and then I speak about, even though they're in these different committees at church, they have certain issues. Say, for example, suicide, depression, illnesses, problems with church leadership, emotional abuse. So I pretty much go through each story within volume 2, and there are 200 stories in the volume. And I take my time and I discuss each character and the issues that they went through and how they turned to God and he brought them out of those situations.
Right. I think that this is a positive thing. Not all books have to be supported or led by scripture to get to the moral point of it. Anybody with common sense, if you read an installment like yours, will know that the moral of the story is this, that, and ever. You know, God, if you have something inside of you, a person, your spirit will tell you when you're actually doing something wrong. If you feel convicted, strange, or you have that funny feeling, you know already that you shouldn't be doing it. You don't need a scripture to tell you that. Your spirit tells you that. So the way, the format that you took or the route you took to produce it, I think it's brilliant. It doesn't take away from it because you didn't, support every chapter or every paragraph with scripture. That is okay for me. But in this world or in business, you're always going to find one or two or a couple who feel like you should have did your work this way or feel like you should have did your work that way. And that's totally okay. Did I lose you again? Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. I don't know what's going on with this line tonight. Yeah.
So what's next for you? Are you working on any new projects? Do you have any other works in the making?
Yes. I am working on Lessons on Church Folk Volume 3, as well as a book on life lessons. And Volume 3 will be an extension of Volume 2. It'll be pretty much the same format. But for the Life Lessons book, I wanted to go a different direction with my readers this time because I wanted to really hone in on some things that we need to know in order to live life.
So do you see yourself ever as a public author writing any other genres? What do you read besides Christian lit or inspirational novels? Do you read any other genres that you enjoy besides spiritual literature?
I read fiction books. I read nonfiction books. I read poetry. I read other Christian fiction books. So I read in a wide range of varieties. I read math textbooks as well.
Wow, God, you are very smart. Because when I see numbers, my eyes go cross. I'm like, I don't know. Somebody give me their phone so I can bring up their calculator. I don't get it. Math has never been a strong part of me. It has never been. So do you see yourself writing a different genre other than the books that you've written? Do you see yourself trying something new or different?
I see myself later on writing a math textbook, but in terms of these kind of books, I want to stick with this genre because this is a genre that I have the most experience in. Because I've been a member of the same church for 29 years, I feel that I'll be able to write stories about it and know what I'm talking about. I would never want to switch to a different genre and not have the experience needed to make the book and the stories what the readers want to read.
I can understand that. I ask that question because I've been asked that before several times. You know, I think that we have some people out there that's versatile. They can write this, they can write that. But me, I kind of like stick to what I know. I can't never say never, but I like to be in my box. I feel comfortable with how I present stories that I know,
So I totally agree with that. So do you have any upcoming events, or will you be will you be signing anywhere, or do you have any events coming up in the near future?
I do have events coming up in the near future. I actually have a book signing at Oakwood University on April 8th, 2012, and Oakwood University is my alma mater. And that Sunday, I will be having a book signing at the bookstore. And this is an exciting thing for me because I'm able to go back to where I went to school and be able to tell people and show people that this is what I've been doing since I graduated. And within the next week, I have another radio interview with Teresa Kellum from WLOU Radio that will happen on February 5th, which is this Sunday at 11:10 a.m. And also I have an event on February 13th, which is also a radio interview. I will be interviewed by Ms. Sherry Valdez-Laqui on Promoting Purpose Radio Show, and that will be February 13th at 6 o'clock p.m.
Now, do you have a website or a blog somewhere where this information can be posted that I can give out to our listeners, that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure. I have two websites. The website for Lessons on Churchfolk Volume 1 is www.lessonsonchurchfolk1.com. The website for Lessons on Churchfolk Volume 2 is www.lessonsonchurchfolk2.com. And my blog for the actual books is lessonsonchurchfolk.blogspot.com.
All right, you then. Well, we surely do appreciate you coming on tonight with us, Antoinette, and giving us information about you and your books. I'm sorry we got disconnected for a little while. It took a couple of minutes from the show, but that's okay. We got all the information that needs to get out. And we do want to wish you all the success in the world with your projects and your journey in the literary world. And also, we want to open up invitations to invite you back. So when you have something new, and you want to come back to share your something new, always feel free to hit me by email. I know I'm slow because I have a lot of things going on. People don't believe. My husband's in Afghanistan, so I'm doing a single mother thing and working and writing and all these other things by myself. So my husband will be home soon, thank God, in March. So I'll get a little bit better because I'm always having, I got like 7 emails and different organizations, so I have a lot going on, so bear with me. But definitely, if you want to come back, let me know, and I'll be able to try to get you on the calendar to get you to come back.
I would love to come back. Thank you so much, Ms. Black, for having me on your show. And I wish you all the best in the radio show. And my prayers are with you and your husband and all the people that are in his crew, that they have a safe return back home.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Internet. Thank you so much. Whew. I'm getting teary-eyed, girl. I can't wait for my husband to come home. Thank you. And you have a lovely night.
You as well.
Real quick, you guys, because I only got like 30 more seconds before I close out. I ended up losing my guest for a minute, so I couldn't I lost a few minutes, but really quick, we have Luna Charles online. Her website is www.lunacharles.com. We're also affiliated with Ms. Internet Davis. You can contact her at woodsdavis1@yahoo.com. You guys have a great night.